Quick heads up. Today is the power hour. We're going to do 2 hours. So today is your chance to get through. And if you're here right now, this is your best shot. Calls are still a little light, but they're starting to roll in pretty quickly. So the board's going to fill up. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic, jump in right now. Press 1 on your phone. And with 2 hours, we should be able to get to you if you jump in here quickly. So go ahead and press 1 on your phone. We'll get those calls lined up, and we're going to get started. I'll keep you updated on call volume as we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is the Power Hour. I'm joined by the guys from Pittsburgh Power. We've got Bruce and John and Ethan with us today. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance. Engines, fuel mileage, performance, troubleshooting, electrical, modifications, upgrades, you name it, we'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and ask the question. We're going to get to those questions in just a little bit. I'm going to bring the guys in. Bruce, John, Ethan, welcome.
Thank you for having us, Kevin. As always, it's a pleasure.
Well, great to have you back here, and we're going to get to some calls in a little bit. But, hey, before we get to what you guys want to get to, any updates on hydrogen? Anything new?
We're still going over the data from the the testing we did with eBurn, and I was still looking for a few things in there. I'm probably going to We're still researching it, so let's leave it at that for right now. Looks like we're going to be able to work with those guys in the future. We talked I talked to Mike quite a bit yesterday, and still pouring through piles and piles of data that we generated with our testing.
Okay, good. I know they reached out to me a couple times, and I'm just waiting on some results, so we'll keep our eye open for that. What's new and exciting these days?
I want to start out with something very simple, and then I'll let John and Ethan get technical. Yes, last week we spoke about radiators. The proper way to clean that radiator, now that it's springtime, and people that are do-it-yourselfers and hands-on, pull the fan off. Pull the shroud off and get in where you cannot get with a pressure washer when the shroud is on, and clean the salt and mag chloride out of those four corners of the rag, which encompasses about 50%, and clean it and put it all back together. You're going to have about a 4 to 5 hour of your time invested in doing that, but it will extend the life of your radiator. That's all that I have.
Well, good advice.
I've got a interesting project we just started. I'd mentioned that we'd bought a complete CM2350 with after treatment and everything for a test engine. And one of my guys, this is another interesting semi-unrelated story, but I've got a guy on lightish duty right now. So I was able to put him on that project. He was bit by something, not necessarily a tick, and ended up with a case of Lyme disease that settled in his knees. He actually found himself in the hospital having his knees drained, and then they called him back and said, you got to get back in here. That was infectious. You've got something really wrong with you. And so he was spent days and days in the hospital getting that straightened out, and he's back on his feet now. So my light-duty project for him, that's just a warning for anybody who's out there with some insects and mosquitoes and things. I think it was actually from a mosquito bite, not a tick bite. So that's kind of frightening. So as a warning, be careful. You don't know what you can get from a mosquito bite nowadays. So I've got him on the project. We built a cart with a full after treatment system on it. We'll be able to roll up to the dyno and attach to the 2350 once we have it on there. So we'll be learning a whole lot more about this system. We've learned a lot, and we're getting, we're pretty good at it and getting better at the service of those and trying to keep that stuff running and reliable. So we're going to generate a whole lot more information once we have that thing tied to the engine dyno and we're working with it, in our time there. So that's a fun project. We've been able to take advantage of a situation and get rolling on a little quicker than I would have otherwise.
John, excellent. You might want to say what the CM is for the people.
Oh, the CM2350. Yeah. That's the modern ISX. That's the ISX. That's the modern 15-liter ISX.
From what year to what?
We call it that's the ECM number, right? That's what they call it.
Yeah, it's the common designation of what ECM's on the engine.
Which is the whole control system for the on that one. That's the controls for the engine and the after treatment system. It's not a separated system, so it'll be ideal for our experimentation.
What year did it come out in?
13, I believe, right? Or 14?
11.
11 to 2350?
Well, 2350 was 14.
I thought so, yeah. 14. 14 and up. And I believe the new X15 also uses the CM2350 controls as well.
It does.
Okay, that was going to be my question. Is that still the same now that they're calling it the X15?
It's actually, yeah. Yeah, it's actually still relevant, yeah, which is one of the reasons I jumped on it.
Yeah, I just looked that up yesterday, actually.
Yep.
Got it. Good. Well, that's exciting. That's good news.
John, any updates on Dorothy?
I guess a little public service announcement here. My first foray into being our webmaster, I put up the page for Dorothy last Friday and meant to put just deposits on there, and we didn't. We put the reduced price for people who place deposits, and I inadvertently sold a few this weekend, so I'm busy hand building those. We're not quite set up with our vendor on that yet, so it's going to be many late nights for John in the next couple of weeks here. So I've got a few of those to build right now. I've got about four of them sold. Everything will be, into production shortly. I talked to the vendor that we're going to use is someone that we've got a great relationship already with. It's going to work out really well, and he's actually sending me some of the parts as we speak to make my life easier putting them together. So that's where we are on that. I'm doing a Cummins installation right now, so we have a Cummins kit for an ISX in a T660 anyway done. We're prototyping that this week, and we'll have the masters built and the bracketry built for that. So going forward, that's one we'll have on the shelf. And now next week I've got to do a DD15, and that'll be production model by then. So we'll have all the plumbing and everything done for that one. So the one that fits the T660, I believe, is going to fit a number of other trucks. We're going to have to do a little more research to see exactly what. But we've got a Pete. What's that Pete that we have next to it? So we've got it should fit a number of different trucks. Let's put it that way. Any of the narrow cab PACCAR products, it should fit. The big cab PACCAR products, the engine's buried in a little deeper. It's going to be some different modifications for that. So that's where progress is right now.
Yeah, speaking of Dorothy, one of your early test trucks, we got an update over the weekend. Tad called and we went over his fuel gauges numbers. Did you see his 30-day average?
I haven't looked at it this week. No, I haven't looked at his last 30-day. He usually calls and gives me an update, but I haven't talked to him in a week or two.
Yeah,
he was 30 in a few weeks ago for brakes.
Okay, so, go ahead. Yeah. He mentioned that he said he did drums the whole shot, so he was happy about that. Mm-hmm. But 30-day average. So we're not talking about one of those trips where you were going from Denver to Kansas City and it's all downhill with the tailwind. And this was a true 30-day average, running freight around the country for 30 straight days, 10.13.
That's amazing.
That is. Just
well,
awesome.
I honestly can't say enough good about that. And that engine responded to this thing, I think, a little bit more than some of the others have. They've all responded, don't get me wrong. But the way that guy, he takes really good care of his stuff. He's a great driver. You know, he takes it easy. But when he was getting good numbers when he's doing that Southern Tier of New York run nonstop, I was like, okay, that's pretty flat up there. It's not that big of a deal. So he got off of that gig, and now he's running Texas and back and things like that. And it's just, and he's still producing numbers. It's crazy. But the truck runs terrific. He feels he's picked up a gear in many places as well. So something about the factory programming and that DD15 and getting some of that carbon out of that intake charge, it seems to have really responded to it well. I can't say enough good about that engine. Yeah, that thing really works well.
Well, you know, this is an amazing story all the way around, because when that truck was new, and he got one of the good ones, no question. And I've said that from day one that I started working with him. I mean, he was at 8 miles to the gallon, no modifications, no nothing. I mean, that was just a bone stock truck. He really, at the time, and he'll admit it, he didn't know how to drive it, but it was doing 8 miles to the gallon. There was a time when I used to say, look, if you're already at 8, we're going to have a hard time doing much more than that. Well, you know, it's been a couple years, 250 some thousand miles. We've been working directly with them. Then we sent him into you. You guys started working with them. That's a truck that we took from 8 to now breaking 10. That to me is just an amazing accomplishment that says, even though the new trucks are getting much, much better fuel economy, there's still a lot we can do with these things. And seeing 10 now for a 30-day average, you know, on a full emission truck, that's pretty encouraging.
It is really impressive. It really is. So that's, so, I just can't say enough good about that thing. That's neat.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an awesome example of what is possible when we focus on it. And, you know, it was we'll call it a team effort. Tad certainly did his part, but, you know, we showed him how to drive it. We did the modifications. That final piece was that soot trap, and now we've got a truck consistently breaking 10 miles to the gallon. Pretty cool stuff. All right, we're going to get to a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to get to your calls and questions. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power. Hey, guys, real quick before we get to some calls. So I haven't been on Facebook in over a month. It's one of those things. I go through cycles. I stay off of it because I get a whole lot more work done, and then I end up getting on there because I want to share things with people, and I get stuck. Well, yesterday I just had to go in and post something. I wasn't going to spend any time in there, but I happened to see that I just had a ton of direct messages, and I thought I'll scroll through there because once in a while somebody that I really need to talk to tries to get a hold of me on there. So I was just skimming through. And I came across this one, and I thought, why do people like this even listen to the show? It was nothing but complaining about the show. And I thought, if you have this many complaints, why do you keep listening? You know, it was everything from, you know, the caller volume wasn't high enough and he couldn't hear it, to, you know, I should stop playing doctor. And then he went on this rant about, and, you know, the whole fuel mileage thing. He said, why do people bother trying to get, you know, a couple more tenths or whatever it is? He says, I get, listen to this, 3 to 4 miles to the gallon, and I just make up for it with my freight rate, so who cares about fuel economy? And then he said, and none of that stuff works anyway. Well, I got thinking about that because I've heard this so many times. Oh, all that fuel mileage stuff doesn't work. Oh, if it worked, they'd just put it on the truck anyway. Well, there's a really easy way to prove that things absolutely affect fuel economy. Just common sense. His truck gets 4 miles to the gallon. The average truck on the road gets 6, 6.5 maybe today. And we have a truck, one we just talked about, that gets 10. And that's not the only one we know of that gets 10. Well, if nothing works, then wouldn't every truck on the road just get the same fuel economy?
Absolutely.
Right.
If nothing makes a difference. Yeah, if nothing makes a difference, then every truck should get about the same. But it's not even close. And the difference between his number, he can get the best rate in the world, but he's still throwing away about $30,000 a year because of that atrocious fuel mileage. And things obviously do work. We took a brand new truck, a truck that was built for fuel economy. That's their whole goal when they build that truck. And they got 8, which is pretty darn impressive out of a factory truck. But we took that truck and got it to 10. That's a big improvement. I mean, those are numbers that a couple of years ago we didn't even think were possible. So I just thought I'd throw that out there because I thought, obviously the guy listens to the show a lot because he pointed out all kinds of things, but he didn't seem to be happy about any of them. Why would you listen to a show that you're that unhappy with?
Kevin, there's always been in my 40 years of doing this, there's always been the negative people. There's always been the people that say, you can't do this and you can't do that. And we had it. We really had it when we were doing just big chems. And it was coming from mostly from the Caterpillar people. And then we got involved with the Caterpillars. And so that stopped. But people were saying a big chem Cummins can't run. We made them run. We made them live and get decent fuel mileage. And we've continued along with the 12.7s and the C15s and 3406Es and the A-certs and now the DD15s and the new ISXs. We continue to go. But there's always been the negative group of people.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Back to, you know, what some of your comments were about how none of that stuff works is the beauty of your of the Fuel Gauges app and site. It quantifies it. You know, we've got data now. It's, you know, if the guys, as long as it's not garbage in and garbage out, which you have to, you know, look at with all data. You know, if everybody's being honest with what they put in there and do and using that as a tool, and it's also a resource for others to see what worked, it's pretty brilliant. And, you know, so that's quantified it all. You and I were both data fanatics, right? So that's one way to quantify everything that we do. Another quick story, since we're talking about high fuel mileage, a lot of you are familiar with him. He's probably listening right now, but Steve Krohn is, broke at 11 miles per gallon. With his contraption that he drives, his International with the Mack fenders and the splitter and the bumper and all of his underbody stuff. And the guy's brilliant. I absolutely love him. And he was always very good. You know, he's in the 9s and 10s pretty consistently. Had a head gasket problem with the truck. He came to see us and I'd been talking. He'd been following us on the VG Turbo. And so we ended up putting a VG on his. And that's what got him that last mile per gallon. So maybe not a whole mile per gallon, but he's consistently now with the weather the way it is, and he, you know, he's in the 11s now. And it took a couple of rounds of tuning. That's a work in progress. You know, I can't tell anybody that we're just going to throw that thing on your truck and you're immediately going to go get 7 or 8 or 9 tenths of a mile per gallon better. But we've rubbed on that tuning nonstop. And I think with what we've got on Steve's truck now, it's a pretty serious, you know, addition. It works really, really well. But to take a guy like that who does everything, I mean, you know, he's got the low rolling resistance, yeah, Tires and bearings, and he doesn't leave a stone unturned. And so we made a big, big jump with the tuning and the VG setup on that. So that's, I'm pretty proud of that one. Really proud of that one, actually.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
He's a joy to work with.
And it's an old engine.
Yeah.
It's an old engine, yeah. It's got at the bottom end's got over 500,000 on it. We just freshened the head on it not long ago. So that's, that probably perked it up a little bit. But the guy, you know, he's not driving around just trying to get fuel mileage. You know, he doesn't run 58 miles per hour. He runs in the low 60s. He's always loaded. He's out there making money, working his ass off. And, you know, his little work in his experiment, his science project's working really well, really well. So a lot to be learned from him.
When I said old engine, it's an old design. I mean, it's a DDEC 4. It's a 60 series. It's not a new design engine.
Hey, I just can't believe that you call this truck a contraption.
I've offended people to racetrack with that. I see a guy show up with a homemade race car. I'll be like, what is this contraption you're driving here?
Yeah, it's a, you know, Steve is a great story, though. I've known Steve for a long time, and he is, I've learned a lot from him. He's tested a lot of stuff. He's proven a lot of stuff. But I was just thinking back. There was a time when I was, because Steve's always been kind of leading this whole charge of fuel economy. He's always been right up there at the very, very top. And I can remember a time when I started jokingly saying, when it comes to fuel economy, and this was only several years ago, but I started saying, you know, we might be using the N-word pretty soon. And what I meant was we might hit that 9 mile per gallon number, because for a while that was like kind of out of the realm of possibility. We weren't really seeing it. You might get it once in a while, but we didn't have anybody hitting it consistently. And now here we are talking about 11 and 10 pretty consistently. That's exciting. There was a time when I almost felt like, you know, maybe we've just hit the top. I don't have any new ideas. I don't know where we're going to go next. And then honestly, what I think what broke us through that was when you guys really started focusing on this. You know, when you really started digging down into electronics and emissions and what else could we do. And those are the things that have gotten us past that hump. And now we're, you know, shooting for bigger targets.
And the factory is doing their part too.
I want to say one thing about Steve Krohn is they say you should listen 66% of the time and talk 33%. I think Steve listens 90% and may talk 10% of the time, but he just constantly listens and he watches.
And good point.
Also, does he run the 264 gears?
Yeah, he's got 264s in there. Yeah, he's going to try to go. One of his rear ends is worn out right now, and he's going to try to eliminate one of them. He's out in search of parts for that right now, last I talked to him. Not sure if he's picked that stuff up yet or not. But, yeah, he still has two functioning rear ends there, and they're 264s. It's interesting. I invited him out. We were at the IndyCar race at Road America last year, and there's some pretty heavy-duty sports car stuff there, too. And he lives in Wisconsin, so I gave him an invite, and he and his son came to the track and spent the day with us. And, you know, he walked around to look at all the aero on the race cars and stuff. And you could tell his wheels were turning. You could just see that he's picking stuff up here right now, and he's going to try on his truck. But, yeah, interesting fella. Really, really enjoy working with him.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, and you know, you mentioned the factory doing their part, and that's absolutely true. We're seeing, you know, new trucks coming out, getting better fuel economy. But what I love about, you know, what we were just talking about today is we have Tad's truck as an example of a full-blown emission truck getting a consistent 10 now. And we have Steve, who's at the other up end of the scale, a DDEC 4, you know, very old truck and really old technology now, doing 11. So we're really doing it across the spectrum of trucks now. That's pretty exciting. Let me get to a break. We'll come back, and we are going straight to your calls and questions right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power. We're going to get right to the calls. We're loaded with questions. We're off to Texas. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Good.
What's on your mind?
Good. I got a 2010 Cascadia with an 07 emission engine. I'm looking to sell her at the end of the year. I have a buyer for it, and I'm actually going to build a 2019 model with the 17 emission engine. And I'm looking, the first thing I want to install that day I pick up the truck is put the Dorothy on it right away. But my question is that, can I put it on my 07 emission engine and then put it on the 17, or is it different plumbing?
The plumbing will all be different. Yeah, the 07, we've just done one on a Series 60. It was a pretty easy installation, so we could put one on there for you. That plumbing on the 07 is 1.5 inches, and I've made the torus on that one slightly smaller to keep the velocity up. And I'm not sure that it would work on the 2017 emission engine. They use a little higher flow on the EGR. And if we restrict it, we're going to cause some check engine lights and some other grief. So I think that probably wouldn't be worth your while to do that.
I wanted just to get some performance numbers for you guys before I take it off. And, you know, I have, like, Road Kings on my truck. I got to take a day to strip everything off my truck and then throw it on the new truck. I bought Road Kings earlier last year. And when I saw the new design, I'm over at Prime, and we got one of the first trucks on the market. The first thing I did is measure to see if the shocks would fit, and sure enough, they would. So I ordered some, and, you know, I'm going to buy the truck outside of the company, but I want to spec it. You know, I run local, and I know my numbers really well, and, you know, I don't want to go on different models just because I'm familiar with the engine. So, well, I appreciate it. Kevin, do you have a Dorothy upgrade on your fuel gauges that I can add that on as a modification?
No, but that's a good point. So I need to get that added. I'll send that over to the programmers.
Well, that's definitely going to be on my next truck. I mean, my truck for 761,000 miles. The emissions, we pulled them apart about 100,000 miles ago, and the slip buildup was only about 4 or 5 millimeters. So the truck's been a clean running truck, about 7.7 lifetime on this truck running flatbed in Central Texas. But I know I can do a lot better with my next truck, and, you know, I just want to make sure. I've never had any problems with this emissions. I've been lucky. I think fuel economy has a lot to do with it. But I definitely want to, just from day one, you know, protect my investment. So, but I thank you guys very much, and I'll be in touch with you guys. I know you guys are developing the new tune for the 17 emission engine. I'm definitely excited whenever that comes out so I can get it done in my truck.
Excellent. Good stuff. Let's head off to Georgia. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Quick question. I have a DDEC 4. I was at Pittsburgh Power last fall, had the OPS put on there with had mufflers in the power box. I already had the manifold and the turbo and balancers, all that. About all I got left is the FAST to put on there. But my question is, I just recently switched over. I had it in frame, recently switched over to synthetic. And I was doing some extended drains, which I'd never done in my life. But I've been doing that now and doing my oil analysis. But my question is, and I'm sure you probably covered this, I just missed it, but at what point do you do filter changes on an extended drain with the OEM filters as well as the OPS filter and fuel filters?
I'll jump in and then you guys can add to it. I'll go back and give you the history on this. Back in the mid-90s, when I first started doing extended drains with a bypass system, the company I was working with back then, when I asked them this question, they said, well, our filter is doing so much that the full flow filter is doing almost nothing, and just change it once a year so it doesn't deteriorate. And I did that for a couple of years, and it worked fine. As I did more and more testing on bypass systems and ended up with the OPS, OPS was recommending every other time. So I was doing OPS filter changes at 25,000 miles and doing all filter changes at 50. Then I decided to just do it twice a year instead. So I just, which worked out to, you know, roughly every three or so times on the OPS that I would change the full flow. And all three of those methods work just fine for me. I didn't see problems with any of them. So the twice a year seemed like a pretty good balance between cost and, you know, not having a paper filter start to come apart because it had been in there so long. So that's kind of my history with it. You're certainly very safe if you do it every other time. So 25,000 on the bypass system, 50,000 on all filters. You're really safe doing it that way. You could extend those full flow filters out even further, I think, and still be okay. John, what do you think on that?
I'm with you on that. That's not something I personally have a whole lot of experience with, extended drains and such. So that's you guys educate me on this more than I you. You know, like I said, I don't want to say I'm not a fan, but if the oil analysis says everything's okay, you may as well roll with it. I've got a fellow that we just put the Dorothy on the Series 60. He goes about 300,000+ miles per oil change, and he said that seems to be when the analysis tells him to get rid of it. And he's gone 1,000,000 miles on his engine, so I'm not. I guess I can't question it, but he runs a Gulf Coast filter, not an OPS. But it was interesting. So I might actually have him do some oil work with us too. We've got the new deal with DA Lubricants, and I'm gonna put some of their stuff in and see how that works for him.
Just to give you, John.
Yep,
Bruce. We'll get to you in just a second because I was going to ask the same thing. John, just to give you some history, I tested many filters bypass, and what I've said over the years, they all worked. Every filter did what it claimed it was going to do. It kept your oil cleaner than not having one. So I've said, look, I don't care which filter you pick a filter, a bypass system, and use it because they're very beneficial. Then my testing just went further into which one worked the best at the lowest cost. Because that was a big part of why we do bypass filtration, was the cost savings and the engine life and all those things. So I started digging down into the numbers, which one really extended the oil life the furthest at the lowest cost. So the cost of filters, the cost of the sampling, the cost of makeup oil, which was, you and I both love synthetic oil. One of the biggest problems I had with the Gulf Coast was every time I changed the filter, which they recommend 10,000-mile filter changes. By the time you change that filter at 10,000 miles and add 2 to 3 gallons of synthetic, because that's how much you lose, there was no cost savings. It was keeping the oil really clean, but by the time I paid for all the filters, all the sampling, all the makeup oil, on some systems, I wasn't seeing a big cost savings. With the OPS going 25,000 between filter changes, virtually no makeup oil because the filter was so small, and the cost of the sampling, the savings were much, much bigger. But every bypass system I tested did what it said it was supposed to do. It kept the oil really clean.
Yeah, that makes sense. That does. Bypass filtration is nothing new. Engines had bypass filtration before they had full flow filtration. I mean, an old flathead Ford has a bypass filter on it. So it's, the method does work. And I like it just to keep the stuff out of the oil. If you've got wear metals in there, whatever, you're going to catch them before they do more damage. So, to me, just engine life is enough of a reason to run a bypass filter, whether you're doing extended drains or not, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Bruce, I was going to say, what's your experience on the filter change for the full flow? What do you say?
I like to take it even 2 more steps further.
Go ahead, say that again. Bruce?
Hello? Did we lose Bruce? Oh, there you are.
Hello.
Maybe he's not hearing
us.
We
can hear you.
Hello.
Yeah, maybe not.
One other thing I noticed while you're finding Bruce is,
hello.
When I first put the OPS on, I was pressing a little ketchup dispenser on the OPS, and my samples were coming back with some stuff in it. Well, I figured out I change that and do pump it 3 or 4 times and then do my sample, and I'm getting much cleaner results out of that. Kind of like you let the oil drain out of the system before you get your sample.
That could make sense. You could get some buildup early on in that sample. Let me get to a break. We're going to come back. We're going to get to more of your calls and questions right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, we're heading into the fourth segment. At the end, I'm going to say goodnight, goodbye, all that stuff. We are going to come back into a second hour, so we're going to get to as many of your calls and questions as we can. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John and Ethan with me. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. We're off to Georgia. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Two questions. One on tires. I've got a truck that's got a lot of weight on the front end, and it had 16-ply tires on it. And I bumped a curb with it and had to replace one of the tires, and I couldn't get another 16-ply tire. Now, I've had other people recommend I go to the it's got the 22.5 low pros. I've had other people recommend that I go to the, I guess it's 315 wide. It's a wider tire for like a local tire. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. So yeah, but how much weight do you need to be able to carry on that axle?
About 14,000. Bobtailing, I'm about 13.2 on that front, on that axle.
So I'll tell you the...
Hey, John.
Go ahead.
I know the truck and the customer, and I've got another customer that's been in a similar conundrum, and he's got he's done a lot of research, and he's picked a specific Michelin for the front of that truck. I could get you a number, John, if you give me a call. Hopefully, okay. You'll get me. I should be back at my desk in an hour or so. But a fellow named Donnie Cornelison's got a great big bunk truck like yours, and he's done a ton of tire research. And he's been through a lot of things, and the fellow is super fussy, really, really good guy, really takes care of his stuff. And he's got one specific Michelin that he runs as a steer tire, and he will use nothing else. And the only reason I know is we had a freak accident in the shop, and we actually put a socket through his tire. We had a socket sitting on it, a regular old socket. It rolled over the socket. The socket put itself upright and somehow put itself right through the tire. We couldn't do it if we tried a million times, and it happened. So we had to buy him a tire, and so I became really, really intimate with the type of tire and why he wants it and how he wants it and so forth. So Donnie is a good customer of ours, great guy. One of our signature cat engines just went into his truck here recently. I could dig his number up and get it to you, and you could shoot him a text or call him. He's really, really friendly, good guy. He'll guide you in the direction you need to go on those tires.
John,
all right, that sounds great.
John, is it possibly?
Yeah, go ahead.
Number, is it the XZA2?
I think that may well be it. Yeah.
Okay. That's what was on this truck when I got it. And like I said, I bumped the curb the other day, and I went to get another one, and the dealership said they didn't have them. All they had was the X1s, you know, the 14-5.
Right. The XZA2.
We went through that with him.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite tires. It does require, if you've had it though, you're fine. It actually requires a wider rim because it's slightly wider than most of the other all-position tires. But this is what I run on my coach. I love this tire. It's really low rolling resistance, and it carries 7,000 pounds per tire. So for an all-position tire.
That's exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah, that's the XEA, too. It's all come back to me now. That was exactly what it was. And Donnie won't put anything else on that steer axle of his truck. They don't even think about it. So that's he said that's all you can run.
All yep. right. That's great. My other question was, now I've had a couple people tell me that on this ISX, because I'm pretty religious about putting Lucas fuel treatment in, they tell me, don't do that. That'll mess up the emission system on the new ISX.
Absolutely not. That won't hurt a thing.
Okay.
In fact, I'd recommend it for the ISX. I'm not sure if yours has the ceramic plungers and the high-pressure pump or not, if they've been replaced yet, but it could only help with the life of those things as well. So there's a high-pressure piston pump as part of your fuel system that's got some of them have some fragile plungers in them. And I think that having that film, the extra film strength from the Lucas in there is only going to do that some good. The lack of lubricity from the current fuel is really hard on those pumps. So I highly recommend the Lucas. You will not hurt the emission system at all with that. It won't bother it a bit. How's it running, by the way? How do you like that tune we did on it?
It's doing great, except out of the I let it get lugged down too much, and I guess the original program and y'all's tune kind of clashed, and it threw me a code saying I was over boost pressure. I was doing probably maybe 38 pounds of boost. You know, like I said, I was pulling a hill and in traffic coming out of Albuquerque and let it come down too far before I upshifted. And
how low were you lugging it?
Well, I was down to about 1,200, maybe 1,150 RPM.
That should take that, but we might need to change a parameter on there or something next time you come through. It should be able to handle that. Yep.
I think it has something to do with the altitude.
Oh yeah, altitude again. Yeah, we do have a little altitude glitch that we're working on too. So did it do it if you're at lower altitude, or is it only done it once?
Oh,
are you there, John?
Yeah, hold on, let me bring him back,
John.
Yep. No, there he is.
Oh, there
yeah.
he is.
I did it twice, but that was it, you know. And both of them were at above 6,000 feet.
Ah, okay. Yep. So we will have to work on that for you. There's probably a parameter in there we're going to need to change. How's it run otherwise? How's it doing?
Otherwise, it's doing great.
Good deal.
You know, I was thinking about the fast. I don't know, because the guy at the shop when I changed the oil and fuel filters and everything, and he was telling me that the fuel filter system on this is kind of like the fast where it automatically pressures itself and then fills up the canister and everything. And because I was talking to him, said, well, yeah, you know, I'm thinking about putting a fast on it. And he was telling me, oh, you don't need that because Cummins is doing that already.
Yeah, that does have an electric pump on it that's similar to the pump in the fast. And it does do it to a similar thing right there on its own. You could probably get a little bit more fuel air separation with the fast, but, yeah, you do have a similar, the truck does work in a similar manner. It pressurizes the high-pressure pump, and it returns some fuel, you know, much like the fast does before it gets to the high-pressure pump.
Okay. Yeah, because I was wanting to, you know, like we talked about was the balancer and the harmonic balancer and the other thing on there, on the front of the motor, what do you call it?
The damper and the balancer, yeah. Yep.
Dampener and balancer, right? I was wanting to do them and the OPS system when I come in there. I was trying to get in there this month, but I'm not sure if I'm gonna make it or not.
All right, you know, whenever you get in, we'll be here.
All right. Hey, guys, I'm looking at the clock. We don't have enough time to do justice to another call. So I want to go over some numbers real quick that we talked about earlier. You know, we talk about fuel economy. I don't get nearly as many questions as I used to. And the reason is fuel's been cheap for a couple of years now. Today's average is $2.59. But I just want to go over some numbers because, you know, the guys comment that, why are people worried about fuel economy? And I went back and looked, so I was using his numbers. He claims he's getting between 3 and 6. Well, you know, an average would help, but the average on that would be 4.5. I gave him the benefit of the doubt. Look, I calculated his average at 5 miles to the gallon. There are still trucks clearly running around getting 5. We also know Steve Krohn's breaking 11, but I used 10. That Tad was getting the 10.13, and I just did some calculations. At today's fuel price, $2.59 a gallon, the difference between getting 5 miles to the gallon or getting that potential of 10, which we've proven can be done, is $32,800 a year in fuel. $32,000, almost $33,000 more. Spending that much more on fuel because you're getting such lousy fuel economy. And then I said, you know, $4 a gallon isn't out of the question. We've been there before. We'll be there again. At $4 a gallon for fuel, the difference in those two trucks in fuel cost is $49,400. That's more than the average truck driver makes for working all year.
And how many miles a year are you computing that on?
125, which is still fairly common. You know, guys are still running those kind of miles. And obviously, if we apply this to a team truck, the numbers get just stupid. But to think that just fuel economy alone saved more money than the average truck driver makes working the entire year, and yet somebody would say, why do you spend time on fuel economy? That's why, right there. Crazy stuff. Hey, thanks to the guys from Pittsburgh Power. The music's playing. I've got to get out of here. We're going to do it again, though, so stick around. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is the Power Hour. I've got the guys from Pittsburgh Power helping me out today, Bruce and John and Ethan. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance, engines, performance, fuel mileage, horsepower, torque, modifications, electrical, troubleshooting, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and ask the question. We're going to get to those questions in just a little bit. I want to welcome back the guys from Pittsburgh Power. Bruce, John, Ethan, welcome.
Thank you, Kevin. And it's always a pleasure.
Great to have you guys here. Thanks, hey, you know, last show we talked a lot about fuel economy, and we tend to talk about that a lot more on this show. My weekend shows, some of my other shows, we've gotten away from it. It's not as top of the list the way it used to be, and it's because we've had fairly cheap fuel prices for a couple of years now. That's not going to last forever. If the economy picks back up, you know, diesel is still the most popular fuel all around the world. So if the economy picks up a little bit, demand picks up, price will go back up, or we'll have some, you know, natural disaster, who knows, but we'll be back to those $4 a gallon prices again. In fact, I hope we get back there. It's the way to make money in trucking is to have high fuel prices, get really good fuel economy. But I ran some numbers and I went over them at the end of the show. And I just want people to think about this. This is why I love the owner-operator model. You know, the average truck driver as an employee driver makes roughly about $45,000 a year. Some surveys show even less. But let's call it $45,000. And they're working hard to make that $45,000. They're away from their family. They're on the road all the time. We know all the things they deal with. And for them to make more, there aren't many opportunities. They can't work that much harder. I mean, they're running a lot of miles. They're gone a lot. And yet, I did the numbers because I had somebody getting 5 miles to the gallon claim, you know, none of that fuel mileage stuff works, and why would you bother anyway? So we compared it with somebody we've documented getting 10 miles to the gallon. We have another truck documented getting 11, but I used the 10 and compared it to the 5. And the difference at today's fuel price was $33,000. But if we go to $4 a gallon fuel again, the difference was $49,000 more. We saved more in fuel costs than the average truck driver makes working all year. Now, let's think about this. In Tad's case, did he have to work full time 300 plus days a year to improve his fuel economy? No. He put some work into it, but he didn't put that much work into it. He invested some money, clearly, put a little bit of work and effort into it. And with that little bit of work and effort, he saved more money than somebody that had to work 300 days to make. Hey, isn't that crazy?
It is.
It's phenomenal.
What does a new Cascadia cost? You could like amortize a truck in 2 years just on the fuel economy savings.
You could. You clearly could. And I used to show people that were running around in, you know, poorly specced classics that there's no way we were ever going to get them, you know, above maybe 6.5 or so. I would show them how by buying a new truck or building a new glider, if you did it right and focused on fuel economy, the truck was free.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And you don't have to deal with that door panel that's always falling off, or those dash lights that are flickering, or, you know, all the other stuff that goes wrong. And you're not in here having Ethan chase wires to make your ABS work. And, you know, so there's a whole lot more to it. You know, the new truck with the warranty, to me, you know, that gets nearly 10 miles per gallon, or you get that and do a little work on it and get yourself to that 10 number, or 9.5, or, you know, something, you know, over 8, it's going to pay for itself.
Yeah.
And you don't have all the BS to deal with.
Yeah. And you have the creature comforts. New trucks are really nice. The technology's nice, the creature comforts, just everything about them. And now that we've finally gotten past all those emission problems, you know, there's a real argument to be made, you know, buying a truck like that, that has the potential to get 10, make the investment, get it right. And like you said, you can make the claim that the truck is free because the fuel savings are going to pay for it.
Absolutely.
The argument that this particular person made, and I've heard it before, was I never pull freight for less than $2 a mile, so why would I worry about it? Well, why not keep pulling that really good freight? Because I'm a big fan of that too. If I can get paid more than $2 a mile, I'm all in. But why they're not mutually exclusive. Nobody said if you get $2.10 a mile, you can't get good fuel economy. Why not do them both?
I have no idea. I really don't.
All right. Anything you guys want to start with, or should we get to calls?
Let's go to the calls.
Ethan's making a whole bunch of notes over there. I'm curious as to what he's doing.
Own notes and thoughts was I was sitting here. We were talking.
I thought maybe you'd have something to say.
No, just some notes.
And Sean Church just walked in, too. Looks like he has a question.
I think Ethan was just enraptured by what I was talking about. That's why he was making so many notes.
That's it. Yep.
A little bit. Yeah. A couple of other thoughts just popped into my head when I was sitting here about a couple different things, and I wanted to write them down so I didn't forget after the show was over.
Hey, one of our favorite callers is here having an after treatment maintenance done on his truck. Paul, our I guess he's a Kiwi or Aussie guy. So he's in right now, and he brought me my bottle of Vegemite as well. I don't know if he's listening or not, but I have to thank him for that. I actually went and bought a loaf of bread and went home and had lunch. I had two Vegemite sandwiches. It was really good, and a small salad.
Yeah, so you got your Vegemite. I haven't seen my butter yet.
So he's in the lounge. We could go grab him too.
Yeah, there you go. All right, well, let's get to some phone calls while we're working all that out. Let's start off in South Dakota. Bo, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I've got a question. I've got a 2014 389 Fitzgerald glider kit with a Series 60 in it. And I've noticed here lately, getting up to speed, like once you get into higher range, get the boost up there, and all of a sudden the engine will kind of lug down, and it'll drop 2 or 3 pounds of boost, and it'll kind of go up and come back. Just wondering what that might be causing that.
Hmm.
Has the charged air system been checked for any leaks? Because the turbo could be, you know, trying to spool, and then it loses, and then spools, and...
Yeah, and that's kind of what it sounds like. It'll spool up, and then it'll lug down, and kind of... down and drop a couple, 3-4 pounds of boost, and then kind of dance back and forth.
And it could be a sensor malfunction, like an in-range sensor malfunction. It's going to have to be hooked up to a laptop to make sure everything's functioning properly. Because if the temperature sensor starts to read, we'll say the intake air temps gets too hot, but it's not, it'll cause the engine to pull back fuel, you know, in order to maintain that it doesn't damage itself. And then when it cools down, it'll turn back on. And I've seen that happen before where a temperature sensor starts to fluctuate. Still, it failed, but it's failing in range.
I see. I have noticed.
Do you have any check engine lights?
No, it hasn't thrown any codes or anything, and I had...
No codes?
Well, I stopped in a local shop, and they thought maybe it was a throttle positioning sensor, and they hooked it up and tested that quick, so that checked out all right.
That'd be a good one to put on the dyno and run it and then recreate the problem, because it sounds like it happens quite frequently at the moment.
Yeah, and it's usually only under load, like when the guy's running empty, it won't do it. It's just when, you know, it's under load.
If you put a fuel filter on it recently, it sounds to me like it could also be fuel delivery. When the fuel demand's the highest, it's something might not be keeping up. Either you've got a high restriction or you might be pulling a little bit of air or something. But look at the basics first, always. And, I'd lean toward a possible fuel delivery problem. Especially if you don't have it. Especially if you don't have any codes.
What about the glitch? Does it only show 25 pounds of total boost?
Yeah, that wouldn't cause it to surge, though. That would only limit the fueling.
Okay.
I'll tell you, we had an interesting... I'll go ahead.
No, go ahead, John.
I've got a Pittsburgh.
We had a Series 60. Oh, go ahead. We're walking on each other here.
Yeah, let me do this. Let me get to a break when we'll come
back.
Yeah,
we're going to go to break.
We'll get right back to this. So stick around. We've got lots more right around the corner. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John and Ethan with me, and we are talking with Bo in South Dakota. Go ahead, John. Oh, you know what? I got to press the right button. Sorry about that. Go ahead, John.
Okay. All right, you got me now? We had a Series 60 in here a few months ago that had an interesting issue. Would see an actual spike in fuel pressure and have it under heavy load only do the same thing this fellow's truck's doing. It would, under the heaviest of loads, it would leak some compression from the cylinder past the injector O-ring and would aerate the fuel. And anything but a heavy load, it wouldn't do it. So it turned out we pulled the injectors out and we found some lower O-rings on the injectors that were just fried. And what was happening was there was compression leaking across the tip and up and past the O-ring. It was actually pressurizing the fuel with compression. So if the injectors have not been out of it, it might be worth a look at the injector O-rings.
Okay, sure.
But again, yeah. If you could get over here, it would be the ideal thing to do, get it on the dyno, and then we'd gauge it up and we could see things like that. So that one was indicative of the problem. We'd see it spike in fuel pressure actually right before the thing would lose power.
All right, let's head off to Washington. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. I'm one of the guys here discuss that old shaky truck, you know, with the lights that never stop shaking and the door that opens. But I also have another problem with the transmission. You actually might be able to do is check a sample for me, transmission sample, Kevin.
Yeah, I've got it here. How many miles are on this transmission?
I'd say it's probably since I got the truck 1.2. I mean, since it came out.
Yeah, so you've had the truck the whole time?
No. I've only had it about, a couple of years.
Oh, so we don't know if anybody ever changed. I would definitely do a fluid change. You've got two problems in the oil that's in that transmission one right now. One, it's got a lot of dirt in it, a lot of silicon, and that's just abrasive to everything. And they're probably related, but it's also really acidic. Which is hard on a lot of stuff as well. So I don't know that there's anything mechanical wrong. I'm not seeing a lot of wear metals or any damage, but I would definitely get the fluid changed on it. It's dirty and acidic.
Well, now, that fluid that I did have changed, I just changed to synthetic about 8 to 9 months ago. But the reason I'm playing around with it is it's actually getting hot under pressure. So I did actually change the oil again just after I did that sample, to send that sample to you. I changed the oil at the same time. And I've also put in a new cooler. But it's still, unfortunately, my transmission is still getting hot. And I'm beginning to wonder, I don't know if you guys would have any ideas to what that might be.
I'll let those guys address the heat issue. I here's what I think happened. This was probably a truck that the fluid was never changed in the transmission until you did it that first time just recently. And it was probably so dirty that we picked up a lot of the contamination again. Or you've got a breach somewhere that's allowing dirt and acidic components to get back in there. Because there's no way we should have been this high in silicon and acid in that short a period of time, unless it was really bad before, which could have been, or we're somehow getting dirt and acid in. So I'm glad you changed the fluid again because it needed it. Now we just need to find the problem. Any ideas on the heat, guys?
If you're making heat, I'd have to look at usually that's indicative of a bearing or something over there. There's extra friction somewhere in there causing the heat, or it's just worn and the gears aren't quite either what they call the base circle. The gear is not in proper area. Then you're gonna have more friction on each gear. So yeah, the temperature, you have very few things that cause temperature to rise like that in the transmission. And it usually means something's failing.
Yeah.
Does it
so who would
right?
I need to
it
speak to?
All right, or is it,
yes. How, no, how well, I,
Actually, yes, it's funny that Kevin mentioned the old oil and then the new oil. When I did change the new oil, put the new oil in about 10 months ago, then about a month later, I started to hear a kind of a light grinding noise, and it's been like that since. And that's the only thing I hear, a slight grinding, which was never in it before. And then this heating, overheating. Well, I guess that's when I noticed it, when I started paying attention to this other problem. So would you guys, who would I need to speak to there if I wanted to see about getting something done with this? Or how would you go about looking at it? What would you think the best thing to do is?
Just call in. Go ahead, Bruce.
Go ahead, John.
Oh, you've got it. So yeah, call in and ask for one of our salesmen, and we can take a look at it. I'm thinking that it probably should come out, you know, before something catastrophic happens. That grinding or growling, you know, if you've got a bearing on one of the I call them lay shafts, but one of the shafts in there, you'll lose that tolerance between the gears, and then the gears are going to work extra hard. It's a bigger lever angle basically than it should be, and you're going to create more friction between the gears, and you're going to see those temperatures go up, and eventually you're going to have a catastrophic failure of some sort.
We've got
a really, really, really good shop that we work closely with that does rebuilds for us. I prefer using them to just putting a reman transmission in. They're really good. We've had very great luck with their stuff, and so call and ask for one of the salesmen. Call, ask for sales, and they can put you on the schedule, and we'll get to work on it.
And do you have any idea roughly what that rebuild could be on that, or just to say get a good look at it at least?
I've seen anywhere on the light end $2,500, and one that needed all new gears and so forth inside about $4,000.
So it's still about the same price as getting a reman anyway, right?
Yeah, getting a reman. If it's okay, if he doesn't have to replace all the gears, it's like I said, I've seen them as low as $25,000.
But
do exactly what's necessary, and yeah, so it's worth. And again, I have more faith in their rebuilds than I do the remans.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. And how long you think? Sorry.
Well, it takes them about 3 or 4 days to turn one around. So couple that with the 8 to 12 hours it'll take us to change it. You know, you're going to be down for another week.
Okay. Good.
Also,
appreciate it. Thanks.
Also, let's not forget that shaft that connects the transmission to the differential that's supposed to be repaired every 500,000. Chances are it's got 1.2 million on it, and that's going to need about a $1,200 rebuild. The drive shaft.
Yeah, that's usually worth doing as well. Those drive shafts tend to twist over time. And then your U-joints go slightly out of phase, and you have vibration that you can never get rid of. So it's worth having those looked at, and they make sure that all the yokes are within tolerance, and you still have the correct fit on the U-joint, on the bearing cups on the U-joints that are fitted properly, and the drive shafts nice and straight so that the universal joints stay in phase, and you won't have any vibrations either. So generally when we do the transmission, we send the drive shafts out and have them gone over as well.
Let's head off to Alabama. Leo, welcome to the program.
Hi there, Kevin. I was wanting you to see if you can look at that oil sample.
I've got it here in front of me. We've got a Series 60. What year?
It's one of those Schneider gliders.
Okay, so...
the truck's a 2011, but it's one of the old engines.
Okay, so about 600,000 or so on the engine and about 48,000 on the oil when you took the sample. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, so overall the sample looks pretty good. We don't have any wear metals, no real contaminants to speak of. It's clean. The one thing I'm seeing that you could certainly make an improvement on, you know, my goal on a Series 60 pre-emission is to keep the soot levels under 0.1. It's a clean burning engine when it runs right. You're at 1.9 on soot. And that's fairly new. The two samples before that, you were at 0.6 and 0.4. If we go back to January of this year, you were less than 0.1, which is the goal that I like to set for this engine. So it needs a little TLC. I mean, this is where you bring it in, you check the tune. If you don't have fleet air filters, put those in. If you don't have the Pittsburgh power muffler, put that on. Those things that'll clean up soot. We want to get this back down to those low soot numbers. Other than that, everything.
I've got all that. I've got all that. I've got the FAS. I got the OPS system on it. The air filters. I got it. And the muffler also. That's why I'm kind of curious why it's still, you know, on the fuel delusion. They did an overhead back around November.
Yeah, the fuel dilution, I'm not real concerned about the fuel dilution. The test that we use on fuel dilution is really, really sensitive. So I'm not seeing anything there that I'm too concerned about. The soot, though, it may be an injector issue. Clearly, all those things helped because, like I said, back in January, you were under 0.1 where we want to see it. But something since then has gone wrong. So we've got to get it back in and figure out what that is. Stick around. We'll be right back. We'll talk more about that right after this. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power. We're talking with Leo in Alabama. So, Leo, it sounds like when everything was right, you do have all those things. We were right where we wanted to be, but something has gone wrong between January and now. We just got to get it back in and check a couple of those things. John, Bruce, Ethan, any ideas?
I have one. Do you have our full tilt exhaust manifold on there?
No, I don't have any of that yet. It's on my wish list.
Because the manifold flowing 20% more exhaust and allowing the engine to run 125 degrees cooler will decrease the soot in the oil. So that's a pot.
I do notice my truck tends to like get up there on the water temperature. Just about any little increment of a hill, I'll hit the 209, 211, and then the fan kicks in and brings it back down. But I'm talking, it's not nowhere near as hot as it should be, and the temperature does seem to climb pretty quickly up there.
Do you have 180 stats or 190s?
I honestly wouldn't be able to tell you.
Okay, on the level, you're cruising along the level on a 70, 80 degree day. What's your colon temperature?
It even at that temperature, it will go up to 200.
I think you have 190s or 195s because it takes 15 to 16 degrees to fully open a stat. So if you can get in, let's put 180s in there and cool that down another 15 degrees.
Okay. What kind of urgency is this, am I looking at as far as trying to bring the suit down?
If my truck was hitting 209, 210 degrees on a flight hill, I would consider that pretty urgent.
Okay. All right. That's one
All right.
issue I've had since I've had this truck a year, and that's about one issue I've had since I got it, where it's the temperature increases.
Yeah, something
other
than
spoke about
that.
Last.
Go ahead, Bruce.
What we spoke about last week when we talked about the radiators and we talked about the adding an extra coolant tank to increase the volume by 5 gallons. This is a prime example right here.
Yeah, that might be a way to go. And something else has gone wrong since January, because like I say, in January, we had the numbers right where we wanted them, but I don't think this is going to
be that hard. What were the numbers again?
So let me go back. Let's see. So in January, let me make sure I'm looking at the right year here. Yeah, January of 2017, soot was less than 0.1. Then in March, it was 0.4. Then in, looks like he did another sample later on in just April, pretty quick, it was already up to 0.6. And then just another month in May, and we're at 1.9. That's a big jump in soot. And soot isn't something that builds up over time. If we have a clean burning engine, it should just shouldn't be there at all.
Right. You know, there's only a couple of places for it to go, either through a valve guide or past the rings. There's not a whole lot of ways for soot to get into the oil.
Yeah, I think we see is when we get a little out of tune, or we get a little airflow restriction, we start producing more soot, and that's where it comes from.
Yeah,
it's not burning as clean.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, sometimes overhead, sometimes it's injectors. It's just, you know, but it was right. You know, he had this thing running right in January. It was right there, less than 0.1, which is what we normally shoot for. Let's go to Massachusetts. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I was curious. I've been watching those Cascadia gliders that Harrison's been putting out. I'm not in a position to get one anytime soon. I'm hoping the 2018s become available as a glider in 2 years. Are those any more difficult to work on space-wise compared to, say, like a Columbia?
No, the Cascadia is actually nicer to work on than the Columbia.
Okay, with the Series 60 piece of cake?
Oh, yeah. There's a ton of room under that hood. That's a nice truck.
Okay. And then the other question I had was, it sounds like everyone's charging FET now on those new gliders. Does it make sense to put brand new rear ends and brand new transmission into that, since you're going to pay FET anyway?
That's not a question for me. What are your thoughts on that, Kevin?
Well, as far as gliders go, the true glider was just frame rails. That's the way they used to come years ago. And then with new rear ends, we call it a rolling glider. And that's virtually what everybody started building. It just didn't make sense cost-wise. You could get brand new differentials in a rolling glider at about the same cost as going out and trying to find your own differentials and mounting and all that other stuff. So yeah, absolutely. On the rear ends, I would go with a rolling glider and new differentials. Transmission, usually not. That there wasn't any cost savings or any real benefit. The FET is part of the crackdown. You know, the government's trying to do away with gliders completely. So they tightened up the FET rules. They're going to limit how many gliders each manufacturer can build each year. They're just trying to eliminate them completely. And, you know, I thought that was really, really bad news when they announced it. But the timing of the fact that we, you know, I don't know that I would build a Cascadia glider. I really just think I would go with the DD13 and build a new truck.
Now that's what I'd do.
Yeah, well, I was on the fence on that. I mean, this is 2 years out, and obviously a lot of things will still change. I mean, what was making me nervous, like a DD15, was that the DEF pump, that plug was corroding on a lot of trucks, and there's still things going on there that a lot of people can't figure out.
Yeah, they've changed that pump with the EPA 17. It's totally different. That doesn't use that same system they're having a problem with.
Okay. All right, well, listen, I'm going to be there next week at some point here. I got either a head gasket or an injector. I'm going to see if I can get you the Swiss version of Vegemite. Have you ever heard of a Cenovus?
No, I haven't, no.
I'll see if I can get a tube of that before I get there. I don't know how likely it is, but I'll have to bring it to you. Thanks for answering the question.
All right, thanks.
All right. Good stuff. Let's head off to Oregon. David, welcome to the program.
How are you doing, gentlemen?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Good.
Yeah, I got a 99 Peterbilt with a C15 that's a 2WS. When I cracked it over, it used to start about in 2-3 seconds. Now I crank it over and it takes about 8 to 9 seconds before it'll start. Do you have any idea what's going on with that?
I think you have a fuel line issue or a fuel filter head issue, but you're getting air into your system. Ethan, is there anything in the ECM that could be causing that too?
Only if it had if the cam sensor goes bad on those, it may not throw a code, depending on the year, and it creates a hard start situation.
But that engine should just start the moment you touch that key. That should fire within a quarter of a second.
Used to do that.
And those cats are notorious for sucking air at that filter head.
Mm-hmm. Some of the vibrations in that factory pack R filter head that doesn't seem to get along.
Yeah, and we see everyone with that issue almost has that exact problem.
Do you guys know how much that filter head is?
Oh, it's like $25 or something. It's not expensive at all.
Yeah.
Where's that located at?
It's on your frame somewhere right by the left front cab mount. You'll see it there.
It's called a filter head.
Yep.
Yeah, it's where your filter screws on to.
Oh, okay.
Now your fuel filter, you have a fuel line in, fuel line out.
Yeah.
That one. Aluminum housing that holds the fuel filter. That's the fuel filter head.
Music's playing. I've got to get to a break. We'll be right back with more of your calls and questions right after this. Don't go away. This is the Power Hour. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. We are off to Indiana. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. This question probably going to be more for you than for them, but I know I need an engine rebuild. I have to save up money for it first. But what I also need, desire, is their manifold and turbo and the crankshaft balancer and the torsional dampener and things like that. Is it better for me to just wait and do everything at one time, or would it be worth it for me to risk delaying the engine rebuild a little bit to get things like that put on first as I can do it?
All right, that's a question for me. And my
I agree.
Answer to that usually is, it's always worth it to do the manifold, turbo, damper, balancer, fast system, fleet air filter, OPS. You know, when you're looking at spending $7,000 or $8,000 on those extras, that increases the engine life, increases the fuel mileage, it helps you to save more money to do the cylinder kits and the rod and main bearings. And then when it's rebuilt fine, sometimes you can get by with an $18,000 or $20,000 in chassis versus a $25,000 or $27,000 or $30,000 rebuild. So I would.
I kind of figured it was going to be that anyway, because this is like the only truck I'm going to bother owning, because, you know, once I rebuild it, I might as well drive it for another 10 years. I dump a gallon of oil in between anywhere from 2,500 to 3,500 miles, going through about 3 gallons a month.
Well, I'm going to, let me retract what I just said. 3,000 miles a gallon and 3,000 is considered wore out. So,
yeah,
it's time to do
some. I mean, it runs good.
Ahead. Well,
okay. So that's.
Keeps running good. You don't mind putting the gallon in. Let's put the OPS on and clean the engine up a little bit. Maybe the oil consumption will come down. Put some Lucas in it and do the manifold turbo damper and balancer. And that way, that part's done when it comes rebuild time.
Yeah, I mean, that's a different, that's another question actually that I considered asking, was how expensive is it and is it worth it to do what, you know, the old guys always say, you know, oh, they used to just throw in a set of bearings, blah, blah, blah. I mean, is it worth it to do that? Because I don't know what that really does. No, I haven't had oil samples done because I go through so much oil. But I buy my oil at Costco, so it's not costing as much as it normally would. So,
Now, years ago, they used to throw a set of bearings. You didn't throw a set of bearings and you had to install them. But we don't do that anymore because rod and main bearings in today's oils, the bearings live the life of the engine. So you don't take and put a set of rod and mains in prematurely unless you're having bearing wear, or your oil got contaminated, or you got a lot of dirt. But so don't just put rod and main bearings in. You're going to spend $1,000+ to do that when you really need cylinder packs.
I agree.
If the engine's running good, you don't mind putting the oil in. Do some of the other extras. But I think you should be hoarding money away for the rebuild. That's what I think you should do.
I agree. Let's head off to Montana. Randy, welcome to the program.
Hello. Are you there?
Go ahead. Yep.
Yes, we're here. I've got a question. It's pretty simple. I really appreciate you guys' show. You guys are awesome. Respect your opinion. I, unfortunately, a couple of years ago, bought a Max Force International. It's actually not been too bad, but I bought it, and so I've driven it for a couple of years. Done okay for me, and it's paid off now. I need to trade it in. I have a good relationship with International, and they're trying to, they'll give me a lot more than everybody else will give me on trade, obviously. It's sort of their problem child. The problem is I was looking at not getting another Max Force, but maybe looking at a Cummins in that Pro Star or the N13. And Mike, that's my question, is which one of those two would you go, or would you just dodge that altogether and try and you know, go to a completely different truck? That's my question.
Now, if you're happy with the International and you have a good relationship with your dealer, stay with the International and put the ISX in it.
You mentioned it.
Okay,
great truck,
so you,
actually.
Did you say an N13?
Yeah, that's
yeah,
the new Max Force is called an N13. Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I'd stay away from that thing.
Would you? Okay.
Do the ISX. I mean, if you like the truck, and just like Bruce said, if you like the truck, you have a good relationship with the dealer. I'm not nearly as critical on the make of the truck as I am the engine. And with the advances that you need with the ISX, I would stick with that.
So the ISX is a 2014. Have they gotten kind of past some of those hiccups they had?
Yeah, 2014 is fine. That's a CM2350. That's a good engine. And I actually like that truck. The ProStar has got the right aero. I don't know if you look at, Kevin, if you studied that truck at all. It's it's a pretty tight piece. The, you know, bumper fit in the front and everything, and the everything about it, to me, is done right. That's a good truck.
I agree, and you know, my early days in trucking, I was 100% international. I ran internet because I same thing. I had an international dealer that I had just a great relationship with, and I ran them for years. So I actually liked the trucks, and the aero on that truck is hard to beat. You know, there was a fight for a long time which truck was the absolute most aerodynamic. And the differences were so minor, nobody could really prove it. But ProStar was right up there at the very top.
Yeah, of the things I look at here with my wind tunnel vision is the that one looks to be about the best. I mean, to me, you know, I look at that, it's as good as anything. Yeah, next to that, yeah. I'd have to say the new T700, the new wide cab PACCAR products with the, I mean, they've smoothed everything off of that. There's no window gutters. There's no visor. The marker lights are smoothed. That truck, the aero looks really good on it as well. But the, yeah, to me, the that ProStar, it gets it right. It's a good looking truck. And then, like I said, the aero looks right on it. And I hear good from people. You know, they hold up well, and they get good fuel mileage out of the box as well.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Let's squeeze in another caller. So let's go to New York. Alan, it's your turn.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Good. What can we help you?
For you? I'm looking at either doing a tune or the power box. I've got a 05 or 04 Western Star with a Detroit in it. What would you recommend?
Do you ever put a driver on it?
It's me. Drivers are a headache.
Yep. Do you, with the advantage of the power boxes, you can turn the power up and down or turn it on. With the tune, you have what you have. So it's a decision that really you have to make. People love the adjustability of the power box, and they love the fact that if somebody else has to drive it, they can preset the remote to power level 1 or 2, unplug it, they keep the remote, and the person driving the truck cannot change it, or you can put it back to stock. So those are the advantages of the power box.
Okay. Now, would you install your manifold before you got the power box, or install the power box first and then the manifold?
I'd have the full tilt manifold on just as soon as I could because of the extra quarter mile of the gallon. And if you can do both at the same time, that's even better.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's, you know what? We're just not going to have time to do justice to another call. Anything you guys want to wrap up with? Maybe just give out the phone number in case somebody didn't get their questions answered here. They can call you.
Okay, phone number is 724-360-4080. You know, Kevin, one thing I want to close with is people still are not setting money aside every week in a maintenance account. And it's so important that they set aside 10 to 15 cents a mile for every mile they put on that truck. And when it's rebuild time, or time for tires or transmission, the money is there. And people have got to force themselves to do it or have the company do it for them.
Good advice. Couldn't have said it better myself. And that's a good reason to use a good accounting software. Profit Gauges is an awesome way to know what your costs are, to set that money aside. Then when you need it, you've got it. So thanks to the guys from Pittsburgh Power, Bruce, John, Ethan. We'll do it again next week. This has been the Power Hour. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Thanks, everyone. All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you here tomorrow for Destination Health.